The Old Testament overflows with accounts of people who demonstrate an exceptional application of their faith within their lives. And one of these examples is the saga found in the book of Genesis, which tells us of the life of Joseph. Now, Joseph was the great-grandson of Abraham. His father was Jacob, who would later be known as Israel. And Joseph was the youngest of Jacob's 12 sons. He was one of the youngest of Jacob's 12 sons. Jacob had several wives. But because Joseph's mother was Rachel, and Rachel was the wife that Jacob loved the most, Joseph acted as if he, even though he wasn't the oldest, as if he possessed the highest status of any of his half-brothers. And he could be very annoying about this. And he would do things like tell his brothers that he has had a dream in which they are bowing down to him. And he would also tattle on their work deficiencies to their father. And it didn't help that their father Jacob gave Joseph this special garment to wear that was nicer than the clothes that his brothers wore. It made him stand out. And so, fed up with Joseph's self-importance, the brothers decided to rid themselves of this pest and to murder Joseph. Reuben, one of the older brothers, objected to this plan for fratricide. So instead, the brothers just sold Joseph as a slave to a passing caravan headed towards Egypt. They did, expecting never to see him again. Once in Egypt, Joseph lands in prison, where he remains for several years. However, he comes to the attention of the Pharaoh because of the God-given ability to interpret dreams that he possessed. And the Pharaoh had a particularly troubling dream. Once out of prison, Joseph is made an administrator for the Pharaoh, and he rises quickly through the ranks until he becomes the chief administrator for all Egypt. He was the Pharaoh's right-hand man in charge of all domestic affairs. And as administrator, Joseph had this vision in which he foresaw 7 years of bountiful harvest for the country. But this period of agricultural plenty would be followed by 7 years of drought and famine. So Joseph implements a nationwide food storage program so that when the famine hit, Egypt would be prepared. And they were. The famine hits, and the effects of the famine were felt far beyond just the borders of Egypt. It went down into the land of Israel. And there, Joseph's brothers were forced now to travel up to Egypt because they heard that there was food there that they could buy for themselves and for their animals. But to make this purchase, they needed to appear before the chief administrator, their brother Joseph. The brothers, however, did not recognize Joseph as their brother. After all, many years had passed. Joseph now spoke Egyptian. Maybe he wore eyeliner and drove a nice chariot, and of course he walked like that. Joseph, however, did recognize his brothers. And after some very dramatic episodes, we are sure that Joseph is now going to get his revenge because he is now so powerful in the country that literally, with just the snap of his fingers, he could make his family disappear out in the desert, just as they had made him disappear so many years before. And talk about justice. That is pure justice. Who could blame him? But Joseph does not extract revenge. Instead, he reveals himself to his brothers, who are understandably terrified. But he embraces them, and he kisses them, and he welcomes them, and he tells them to go home, and to gather all that they have, their families, their possessions, their herds, their flocks, and then return to Egypt, because this famine's going to continue on for several more years, and he will give them land in Egypt where they can settle, and he will keep them supplied with food. The brothers do as they're instructed, and their descendants thrive for generations in the land of Egypt. Joseph demonstrates a remarkable level of forgiveness towards his brothers. And in doing so, it can be argued that he changed the course of history. His family there in Egypt, they would become the Hebrews, who in turn would become the Israelites. Joseph's forgiveness was a good deed. Joseph recognized God in his life and he acted appropriately. He demonstrated what it's like to live as a child of the Most High. He did not succumb to a desire for revenge, although he could have. Although God would not deliver the law and the commandments to Moses for another several hundred years, Joseph shows what it means to live a life centered on God. For us as Christians, we see Joseph's forgiveness reflected in the teachings of Jesus Christ, such as what we find in our reading for today. Our reading is from the Gospel of Luke, and it's part of a larger passage that we call the Sermon on the Plain. This sermon is a collection of Jesus' teachings that form the heart of the entire message of Luke's Gospel. It's the theme for the Luke's Gospel. And what we find here is an assemblage of commands that, when taken seriously, they should make us quite uncomfortable. But before we get to these commands, we also find a parable at the end of the reading. And I would like to take a look at that parable because it tells us where we're going with this sermon. The parable says, "A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." Now, what this parable is describing is a simple transaction in the marketplace. Let's say you need to purchase a basket of grain. You go to the market where the going rate for grain is $5 a basket. You approach a vendor and you give them $5. The vendor then takes their basket and they fill it to the top with grain, and then they pour that grain into your lap, your apron, to be carried home. Normally, that would end the transaction. But this market is different. In this market, the vendor takes the filled basket, and before pouring the grain into your apron, they press down on it to make room for more grain. And then they shake the basket back and forth, so that the grain settles. Now there's room for more grain in the basket, so they pour more in there. But they don't just level it off. They pour a heaping amount, and it's just overflowing. You don't get a level basket. You get a heaping basket and you go home happy. The parable teaches that what we give in this life is what we can expect back. However, in God's kingdom, we shall receive much more. We shall receive an abundance. The passage starts with an important word. It starts with Jesus saying, "But I say to you that listen." Jesus is talking to those who have gathered to hear him. And what these words mean, that these are not blanket commands for the entire world. No, the words that we're about to read are intended for the Christ followers, those who have come to Jesus, who are willing to listen to him, and who are willing to change their lives for him. And what we find, first of all, are 8 statements that turn the tide on human behavior. They contradict all logic as we know it. They say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer them the other. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you. And if anyone takes your stuff, do not ask for it back. What kind of world would it be if people acted like this? I mean, after all, the rules of society are clear. They tell us that we are to hate our enemies. I mean, after all, they're enemies. And we should try to hurt them at every chance. And if someone curses us, we should curse them back, finger for finger. And if someone strikes us, we should smack them back because our honor is on the line. But in Jesus' world, in Jesus' very impractical world, we're told to love our enemies. We're told to do good things to those who aim to bring us harm. We're to pray for those who hurt us. If someone takes our jacket, we're to give them our shirt as well. We give to anyone who begs of us. And if someone takes from us, we don't seek to get it back. And then the meaning of all this is summarized in that wonderful phrase, do to others as you would have them do to you. And it's not difficult to imagine that Jesus had the Joseph story in his heart as he offers these words to the people. Joseph treats his brothers as he wished they had treated him. What Jesus is doing here is calling for a realignment of the heart, a new way of relating to the world. In our lives today, enemies are, well, they're a dime a dozen, aren't they? We got vaxxers and anti-vaxxers, maskers and anti-maskers, Democrats and Republicans, conservatives, liberals, pro-gun, anti-gun, coastal elites, middle America, Alabama football fans versus pretty much everybody else. And we're miserable being so divided. It's as if Jesus could see into the future, and he's calling us to heal our divisions. The next section in this sermon talks about sinners. Now, sinners are not necessarily evil people. Sinners are just regular, ordinary folk. Without Christ, all people are sinners. And Jesus explains that even the sinners, the ordinary people, love those who love them. Sinners reciprocate good deeds to those who are good to them. Sinners gladly lend money to those they expect to pay it back. Sinners, they follow the rules of society. Their expectation is that they will be treated in the same way that they treat others. They understand the rules. They know that if they treat someone one way, that person will treat them back the same. But Christ followers, on the other hand, are called to lift themselves above the sinners, to set themselves apart. They are called to love not just those who love back, but to love everyone, even their enemies, especially their enemies. They are called to lend, but expect nothing in return. They are called to live a new and radical reality based on a love that is free, not a love that is transactional. And what's the reward for all of this? The reward for their lifestyle will not be glory or riches or power or fame. It will be, however, to join the ranks of the children of God. And these children of God, Luke tells us, they're merciful. They do not judge. The children of God are forgiving. They are generous. The children of God live in the kingdom, a place that is defined by the abundance of life. In the Dari language of Afghanistan, there is an ancient proverb. The proverb says, "The naked don't fear the water." Now, the water in this case refers to rivers. And if you're a traveler traveling by foot through Afghanistan, then crossing a river, fording a river, can be extremely treacherous. You could slip and fall. You might step in a hole. You might be knocked over by the force of the water. It's hard to know what's going to happen when you cross a river like this. And as you cross, whatever you are carrying with you at the time, it could be lost and swept away. But the proverb tells us that if you carry nothing, if you strip down naked, the river can take nothing from you. The naked don't fear the water. The naked are free. In our reading for today, Jesus is calling those who will listen to him to strip off the expectations of the sinners and society. They're to abandon the calculus of reciprocity. And instead, they are to treat each person with generosity, forgiveness, and with love. And when they can do that, then they will enjoy the overflowing abundance of life in God's great kingdom, for they shall be the children of God. Amen.